听力课堂，听 class.com。
Unit 3. Speech at China National Defense University. Weinberger.
I am honored indeed to speak before the National Defense University of the People's Republic of China. While this institution is very new, having enrolled its first class just last month, I am certain it is destined to become a premier institution of learning in the People's Republic of China. Current and future military leaders will have here the opportunity, so necessary in military life, to pause and reflect on major issues of strategy and tactics. I am proud to note that U.S. Army Attaché Designate to Beijing, a former professor at our National Defense University, became the first foreign officer to conduct classes at your institution. In our own National Defense University, we have found this type of open intellectual exchange to be absolutely essential for preparing officers for leadership in the complex world of the late 20th century. I trust that our educational institutions can continue to exchange information and personnel in order to increase the knowledge, familiarity, and friendship among the future leaders of our two armed forces. The development of USA and PRC military relations began soon after our normalization of diplomatic relations in January 1979. Military contacts have progressed since that time as a natural byproduct of normal political and economic relations between friendly, non-allied countries. The measured growth of U.S.-China military relations is the result of a willingness of both sides to pursue policies that satisfy each country's short-term and long-term interests. Foremost among these is a common concern that no one country dominate Asia or the world, but to maintain peace through strength, thereby creating conditions favorable to the continued rapid modernization of Asia. We believe a secure, modernizing, and friendly China with an independent foreign policy and developing economic system is an essential part of international security. Our goal in U.S.-China relations reflects the overall peaceful purposes of American foreign policy. The basic goals of U.S. national security policy remain essentially unchanged. We threaten no one. We have no aggressive intent or requirement. We seek only to preserve the independence, free institutions, and territorial integrity of the United States, to preserve U.S. interests abroad and those of our allies and friends, and to help shape an international order in which freedom and democratic institutions can survive and prosper. An international order in which states coexist without the use of force and in which citizens are free to choose their own governmental systems. To achieve these ends, the United States has developed a national strategy that combines political, economic, and military elements. Politically, we wish to promote democratic institutions not only by example, but also by direct support and encouragement. Economically, we wish to create a stable, productive international economic system backed by cooperative agreements to promote growth in a world economy free from the destructive forces of protectionism. Militarily, our basic defense strategy is deterrence. Such a deterrent strategy does not require accumulating military equipment for its own sake. Rather, we seek to establish stable military balances secured by sufficient military forces to prevent conflicts from occurring in the first place. Further, we seek to limit the corrosive and coercive efforts that preponderant military capabilities would have in the hands of an implacable adversary. This basic military strategy has been implemented through four major operating policies that together constitute the cornerstones of our defense policy: a balance of force adequate for each mission, alliances for collective defense, forward deployed forces, and flexibility. We must maintain the capacities to perform a number of very diverse critical missions which underpin our strategic nuclear deterrence, defense of our vital interests around the world, the protection of our sea lines of communication, and the ability to protect military power. In order to execute these diverse missions, we must rely on a balance of strategic nuclear, intermediate or theater nuclear, and most importantly, conventional forces. Indeed, as the Soviet Union acquired vastly increased nuclear capabilities, the credibility and prudence of relying on massive retaliation gave way to our flexible response posture. So one of our goals, and indeed one of our highest priorities, is to secure a thoroughly reliable strategic defense against nuclear missiles. This we seek not for military advantage, but to keep alive the hope of a world in which such missiles are obsolete and useless U.S. alliances. Treaties and agreements serve not only to define clear lines against aggression, but by combining the resources of many nations, collective security agreements also help all to share the common burden. Our alliances with the nations of Europe, Asia, Australia, and our own hemisphere, along with other security relationships, short of alliances, are critical in U.S. strategy. Deterrence of aggression also demands forward defense. We therefore deploy ground and air forces in Europe and Asia and naval forces worldwide. Forward deployment of our forces makes them far more effective, since they are immediately available and ready for combat in coalition with our allied forces. In peacetime, forward defense also represents a clear manifestation of the U.S. commitment to the common defense. Forward deployment adds credibility and flexibility to our basic military strength, and so enhances deterrence. One would hope that the world would be free from the behaviors which require such calculations of national security. But unfortunately, we do not yet enjoy that environment. I can assure you that the mistakes of the 1970s will not be repeated, when we lost too much of our deterrent capability. Indeed, one of our aims is to reduce the threat these nations, as well as the United States, now feel. Seeking ways of reducing tensions and resolving conflicts in a peaceful manner must, of course, be our priority goal. To conclude, a strong and independent China contributes to the peace and stability of the Pacific region. Our developing relationship is and will be based on our common interests, and the active improvement in our overall relations will advance that end. In my country, we have viewed with admiration the extraordinary economic reforms undertaken by China since the third plenum in December 1978. The ensuing economic growth, the enrichment of the lives of the Chinese people, and China's friendship, respect, and concern for its neighbors contribute to the peace and strength of the entire region. The key to respect in the region is economic power rather than mere military force. We have cooperated and will continue to contribute to China's defense modernization, but our purposes must be clear and our expectations realistic. As President Reagan put it, our intention is to provide China with the capability to defend itself. We recognize that China's long-term modernization program understandably and necessarily emphasizes economic growth. Thus, we should approach our common task with a sense of balance. To quote President Reagan, the U.S.-PRC military relationship helps develop and maintain China as a force for peace and stability in the region and the world, while not posing a threat to other U.S. friends and allies in the region. The United States and the People's Republic share many common perspectives. We share common interests in safeguarding stability in the region. We pursue military cooperation as friends rather than allies. That cooperation threatens no nations. Indeed, it maintains the peace to which we both aspire in Asia and the Pacific.